It's a gray orange.
Okay. These guys run up. Let me just summarize this. Now I've got her, I'm pretty sure. Okay. These guys went on up at 18,000. The one guy got edema. So they set up a tent for him to shelter him if it could.
You tell him it's pneumonia now.
Right. We got that. We got that in the day beating. They know what that is. Okay. So he's got edema. Yeah. They put up the tent and they left him. The other four went on. This was at 18,000. Okay. In the final analysis, this guy gets, he figures he's all done. So he ties himself onto the tent frame and he froze to death.
Wind, terrible winds.
Right. Right.
Came thundering.
Okay. So the other four continued on up. They got to about 19,000 and 19,300.
They had to get that high to blow where they were.
Okay. At 19,300, man, the roof comes in. The weather, the wind starts to blow, and they said, man, let's get out of here. So they decided then at that point to take a shortcut to the east. Yeah. Instead of coming back the curved route that they followed up the west approach, they decided to cut to the east down through this hole, and they never made her. The wind hooked them and blew. One guy was able to jab his ice axe into the snow and arrest his fall. Were they roped together, Don?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay, we'll be right out. They were roped together. There's four of them.
No. Two. Two were never found.
Okay, so nobody knows where they ended up.
I know where they're found. Somewhere in the area where they have it, too.
Yeah.
See, Barry, now, you've got to talk about Babcock here because...
Okay, now let's bring Babcock.
He was also on a climb. I had made an airdrop from Babcock, which I well remember.
But did he come in on foot also?
Yeah, from the Tantishna North Side. And he was making good progress. They were experienced and they were strong climbers.
Now they were on the mountain.
And knowledgeable mountaineers.
Right?
So I told Park that I'd watched their progress and they were overtaking the Wilcox Five. And I said, if I got a chance, I'd drop them a note to tell them that we needed their assistance. So the next day, the day that I found the sleeve and the ice axe and the frozen hairy hand sticking out of the snow, at about 18:07, east of Archdeacon's Tower, lo and behold, in my circling and looking, Babcock expedition moved through the 18.5 level, got clear to 19.3. And I said, here's my big chance. I'm flying alone on oxygen. And I took a shopping bag with six Hershey candy bars. And I drew a map. And I attached a blue surveyor's ribbon, 50 feet long. And this map showed them where they were and where this hand was. And I circled at about 19.5 while they went over the side and dug out climber number one.
Babcock got in there and got him out.
No, they didn't. And then attached by the climbing rope, completely buried, was climber number two. The remaining two members have never been found.
Okay, but I mean, they got the Babcock, got the two that they found out.
No, they didn't.
Well, who
still there?
Well, all of them are up there.
Yeah.
Well, I thought they got two of them.
No, there's a lot of people.
Well, I know that, but I mean, I thought of the Wilcox bunch, they got a couple of them out, but they never recovered anybody except the one guy up in the tent.
At 18.7, 18.9, a helicopter couldn't negotiate.
All right.
Furthermore, I could have possibly got him at 16,000 at a great risk, but they were not at 16, they were at 18.9 and in some terrible crevassing. And they remain there to this day.
So in other words, now, did anybody get, somebody obviously got the guy at 18.3 that was in the tent?
I'm sorry to say, I think he remains at 18.
Is that right?
That's right. And Aaron,
what did he do? Just leave him sitting there?
Big cover with snow.
Was he covered when Babcock went up through there?
They found him.
Gee.
And he horrified the whole crew.
You just walked by him, went up to the summit, came back, and walked by him again?
No, they examined him to see if they could give him first aid.
Yeah.
He froze like a wooden Indian.
So then they continued, Babcock continued up to the summit.
They were mortified.
Came back by the guy and just kept going down the mountain.
Yeah.
And he sits there in a tent.
He wasn't sitting in the tent. The tent had blown away. He stuffed a couple of broken poles in the snow to try to anchor himself, and tied his carabiner snaps, three of them, there to a line he had wrapped around the broken tent poles.
Okay.
And he was just hanging there by a thread. Thunderous winds.
The Babcock continued to go on. He just
couldn't help him.
Couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So in other words, the whole Wilcox expedition got lost up there. So there was nothing. You dropped the note. There was nothing they could do.
Well, at least we resolved the fact
where they were.
We found out where some of them.
Yeah. How did you know that they were in trouble down the five?
Well, the other seven that walked out wondered about them.
Oh, I see. So they
panicked.
They contacted you and said, man, they're having troubles up there?
Yeah.
I see. So then you went up and looked?
Yeah. I looked the second day.
How long did you fly? Approximate hours. How long did you fly?
7 hours.
7 hours of flying.
Yeah.
Over 1 day period?
No. Over during the 2 days.
2 days.
You don't have that much
fuel. No, right.
Super Cup.
Okay. Well, I mean, okay. So the operation's good.
About a 3.5 hour shot of that and 20,000 feet
for
one day.
Okay. Right out. That's the third time we heard that any time.
She's
going to
get mad at us.
No, she isn't. I'll just cut her out of the royalties.
Yeah.
That's right. Okay, so the Wilcox expedition terminated there. I mean, seven of them down, five of them lost, never got the five.
Right.
And that was her.
Tragedy of McKinley. Let me say something. That in the case of Davidson, Johnson, and Janay, and Blomberg, the same winds thundered. This wasn't the 20th of August. This was in January, and it was 148 below, and the thermometer broke and registered that low temperature. And they beat holes in the rock and the ice with their axes and survived a walk and stagger down the mountain where they could be picked up.
Yeah, if it hadn't been for Ray Janay, Davidson might still be up there. Okay, now let's go into the Torrey climb. It's 64, you said it was?
64.
Okay.
Right.
Have at it.
Since this original Dr. Washburn survey of the range, a means of access was found to the glaciers of the Alaska Range, the Mount McKinley group, and it opened the way to the routes of the we call the famous first climbs. And prior to 50, there were only two major first climbs, both from the northeast and the east northeast, Pioneer and Karstens Ridge. In 1950, Dr. Washburn and a party made the first west buttress climb that makes three rounds. That leaves everything else unclimbed in sight, which is a considerable amount of first climb material. Worldwide mountaineers and great talents and aspirants to the climbing world wrote in and wanted to know if I could land in such and such a location so they could try for the route of the first climb of the south face of McKinley, the southwest buttress, the north wall, the northwest wall of McKinley proper, the east buttress. The traverse crews came in. Boyd Everett, whom we also overlooked up to now, did the extremely dangerous laterals of the Cassin south face climb with 19 crew members. They sprained one ankle among 19 men into a 60-day climb that has never been equaled. Lionel Terray of France, called La Pistole, Piston of France, who had climbed every mountain of consequence in the world. He wrote the book, The White Spider, and he had spent considerable time solo climbing in the Himalayas. Actually, in civilian life, he was an undercover agent for the prefect of police, Paris. Actually, he was a tremendous athlete and a brilliant mind, and he attacked the most difficult climbs imaginable alone. In the case of Mount Huntington, he had somewhere got a hold of this foreboding knife-like ridge that disappeared into the hazy far distance, and had decided that he would put together a crew if I could land in the area of Mount Huntington. The answer was yes. I'd taken in 6 unsuccessful, sometimes extremely talented expedition crews. That's 6 crews, not 6 crew members. 6 different people, possibly 60, 70 people, had tried the route that Lionel Trey proposed to climb.
Hey, Don, let me interrupt you just for a second. What about the Mountain of My Fear?
That was a west face of the same mountain by Dave Roberts.
That was the west face?
Yeah, this is a northwest approach.
Okay.
It's a similar ridge.
The west face, in other words, Huntington had already been topped. They'd gotten to the top.
Right.
But it's the route we're talking about.
Right. Okay. We're talking about a tremendous Class 6 climb up the west wall over tremendous overhangs. You need artificial assist in climbing straighter than sheer vertical rock. And it's a technical climbing, and it requires tremendous strength. And in spite of the fact it was extremely dangerous, we're speaking about Dave Roberts. By the way, Dave Roberts with the Harvard Mountaineering crew climbed the north wall of McKinley, called the Wickersham Wall, several years previous to his attempt and final successful first route climb of Mount Huntington. He has a great background of technical rock climbing, which is what is needed, plus a lot of muscle. He's a Harvard graduate, majored in English literature, and wrote a great account of the Mountain of My Fear, which is the west route, the west wall of Mount Huntington. He didn't, however, write up the north wall of McKinley, the Wickersham Wall. In 1907, Judge Wickersham, with the team, was nearly wiped out in a huge avalanche off the 7,800 foot level of the Wickersham Wall, a route that Roberts accomplished. And Judge Wickersham, after nearly starving on their trip out to civilization, which was the old mining village of Kantishna, told all the miners, he said, the only way that anyone will ever climb the north wall of McKinley is in an aeroplane. And that was 1907, about. Okay, we have Dave Roberts.
When did Roberts climb that? When did Mountain?
Probably in 67 or 8, approximately.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, it was after Trey was there.
Yeah, and Dave Roberts had 4 of the best of the Harvard Mountaineering Expedition team. Well, from the Wickersham Wall, and he lost one of them from the top of Mount Huntington, clear to the bottom.
I know.
Okay.
And you flew those guys, didn't you?
Yeah. I landed them at the location west of Mount Huntington, and I picked the 3 of them up in the saddle of Mount Huntington at about the 8,700 foot level.
Well, had Huntington ever been climbed at all when Trey went there?
Well, there was 6 expeditions.
But they'd all failed.
That failed.
In other words, nobody had ever made the summit.
Nobody put a dent in it.
Okay.
Lionel Trey.
Okay, that's where I was confused.
The great Frenchman.
Okay.
Was the first.
Oh.
Also a member of the winter climb of January 67, Farine Batkin, another tremendous physical specimen from France, accompanied Teray along with a French Dennis Subi, and between the two of them they saved Teray's life on a desperate belay, a fall of the leader Lionel Teray. Nearly broke his back, but they caught him and they anchored him and recovered him, and he continued with a partially broken back up at least 50% of the ribs that was left to become the first to ever climb Mount Huntington. Anyway, okay, we're now talking about several things. Have you got them all straight?
Okay, we got Huntington, or 1964, Teray is going up Huntington.
Right.
With these two other guys.
Now, we brought into anything else?
It's a three-man crew, right?
No. Teray had an eight-man crew.
When he climbed Huntington.
Yes, indeed.
Okay, you missed me somewhere there. All of a sudden,
I've got some great pictures.
All of a sudden, you're climbing Subi and
Dave
something
Dave
else.
Roberts had a four-man crew. Later, several years later, he climbed the west buttress, the vertical wall of the west side, after Teray.
Yeah,
Dave
okay.
Roberts.
Where did Subi come into the picture?
Subi was a French dentist, along with Perino Batquin, that saved Teray, the great Frenchman's life, as he fell off the near pinnacle of Mount Huntington.
When?
On his first climb in 64.
Well, that's what I just said.
Yeah, but there was an eight-man crew there in Lionel Teray's crew.
Oh, okay.
I have pictures of them.
Okay, but there's just the three of them.
No, the whole crew made it. That bunch of top Frenchmen all made it.
What I was going to say is the three of them were climbing together when Teray fell. Obviously.
Well, they're all roped together, but the
all
two people that took the strain was the French dentist and Farino Matkeen.
Okay.
At any rate, all the Frenchmen topped out Mount Huntington in 64 from the northwest, unbelievable approach.
Where did that fall occur, Tom?
Well, better than halfway up. It's extremely sheer, cornices to the right and left, standing straight on end. I have a picture of him almost to the top after the fall. So that had to be a great picture. Mary Carey took the picture.
Mary Carey took
in a low flying airplane about 50
feet. Is that
anyway,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's
so
the
then,
Teray expedition.
After Teray and his crew of eight, as I recall, successfully climbed the mountain, the problem was to get down. Well, they had hardware on the way up, which helped, but always the cornices, the crevasses, shatter and thunder to the right and the left. As they come down the route, everything is uncertain when traveling a folly cornice, because it can fall out from under you and take everybody with it, plus tons of ice. And they're very sheer routes there. Anyway,
yeah,
that's okay.
There. Well, you can sit there. Anyway, bugs you. With me.
I came in and noticed that Teray's crew, we watched them at the summit, and then later when they got to the bottom 5 or 6 days afterwards, I came in and landed for the first pickup, and they were in bad physical condition. Actually, they were a top team of rock artists from the finest climbing clubs of all Europe, mainly France. But anyway, their faces were lacerated, they were sunburned with Sahara type sunburn, and their ears and their noses were peeled and frostbitten, and they had taken a terrible beating from the winds from the top of Mount Huntington. And so I landed when they first crew arrived at the bottom of the northwest approach of Huntington, and I was so elated that they had a successful first climb and hadn't lost anyone,
I brought along a floor show for them. I bought some an old-fashioned Victrola and some dancing girls, and we have some pictures of this party. At first, Lionel Terray and all the other Frenchmen were so hurt and exhausted, all he wanted to do was climb on the airplane and go. And then somebody fired up the photograph of the Marseillaise on it, this national anthem of France, and one member took stock and took heart and dragged a goatskin barely with a drink of vino from one of the beat up tents out, and the party started. And after it got started, I couldn't hardly get them out of the basement, honey.
Where were the dancing girls now?
Well, one of them was Roberta. She was,
is that right,
wrapped in a wolf hide.
Wow.
And one of them was Dorothy Jones.
Is she another Talkeetna guy?
Mm-hmm. Runs a store down there. And there were several other talent there. And they had a ball. They got full of vino and started whooping and howling and singing French songs. And then realized that they finally would escape from the mountain in one piece and were all out of their minds with joy. And it's sorry to say, following fall near Chamonix, France, Lionel Terray, making a very minor climb, was wiped out by a fatal avalanche, a rock avalanche, and this ended the great career of La Piston.
How do you spell Chamonix?
C-H-A-M-O-N-I-X. Look in the dictionary and don't misspell it, because, man.
No, that's what I'm going to have to. That
but
sounds
that's
like
no problem.
Obscure French peak.
Yeah.
Someplace.
Well,
I don't know what dictionary I look in, but I'll find it.
Anyway, and that was a great and long climbing career, an outstanding mountaineer in all of Europe and Alaska, too. People that knew Lionel Terray were sad the day that Lionel Terray was wiped out by a minor avalanche in the French Alps.
Hey, Don, how did you know? You knew ahead of time, obviously, that they had been victorious on the peak.
I watched them. We took pictures almost at the top.
You followed them all the way, and when you saw that they were that they made it and were on their way down, then's when you set up the idea of bringing Roberta the Boston girls in there. And you were you waiting for them when they got down, or did you get
no,
there?
No, they got down, and all the crew got down, and then I had other trips in the area.
Nice. Wild.
When I have some pictures of that, which might.
One
of the members that I mentioned, Perrine Battine, as a young child, worked in his grandfather's flour mill in France. You have that?
Yeah, well, that's in 148 Below. They gave a real nice biographical sketch of him in there prior to the time. This was, of course, before he fell through the hole, you know, or when he
and it's got the wild horse deal in there?
Yeah.
Okay, what's next?
Yeah, that's in 148 Below. Well, the next thing, and boy, we got to bear down on this detail-wise, and that's the Machico Sequida.
Yeah.
Now, the best way to handle it, Don, is this way. Let me make this statement, and
well,
you can
I
say.
I know you start and stop it with that, so let's go.
No. That isn't what I'm going to say at all. What I want to do is ask you a question. First of all, is my observation accurate? I was down around Talkeetna. Right after that happened, I've talked to you about it numerous times. I've got a little bit of it on the tapes here, and I've listened to those. I get the impression that the Machico Sequida expedition got to you more than any other climb that you've ever serviced.
It did what?
Got to you.
Naturally. Here you have.
Okay, but more than any other climb.
Well,
that's hard to say, I realize. But,
in different ways.
I know it, but I say, is that a fair and accurate?
Did you get a rundown on Jadinger? Did you get a tape on Jadinger?
Yeah.
No, you didn't. Okay, put that down. I remember it later. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, that was what.
No, I but you want to know a contrast, and I say that the Jattinger was a comparable sad.
And when did that happen?
Probably in '69.
Is that a long story?
No, but well, okay.
Just give me a
Jattinger and he's a great hand, a sociable guy. All of these people are good athletes. They've got to be.
Oh, yeah.
He was probably about 22 or 3 years old, and was a star hockey player. He branched out of amateur hockey, and he looked like for sure he'd be a full-blown professional. And a rough and tough kid, not too big. And so they arrived in Talkeetna, and I wasn't scheduled to take this crew, but the weather was in and out and bad. And during this time, I had many, many commitments. So during a period of about 7 days of intermittent weather, I moved 5 crews. And this crew, which was not my crew, waited and waited, and finally I'd known one of the members from before, never met Jattinger before. He came over and he said, "Listen, where are you getting these people from?" He said, "Well, I'm moving a crew from the Cathedral Spires. I just brought in a crew from Mount Witherspoon, and that is East Anchorage, 90 some miles. And the Cathedral Spires, of course, is 50 miles west of McKinley. And I brought a West Approach crew in here, 5. He says, "Gee, we could have went in on the backhaul. There's 5 of us." I said, "Right, but you didn't ask me." He says, "Look, how long do you suppose we'll have to wait? They say the weather's bad." Well, I say, "The weather's not good, but if you know the routes, you can still make it." Well, he says, "Good, we'll end our commitment, and we want you to take us to the West Approach, because we've already wasted 9 days while you move these other 5 crews, some of them going in and out of the place we want to operate from." He said, "Fine, jump on, boys," and away we went. And there's a method of going over the top and between the layers and under certain conditions, not becoming trapped with getting the job done. So I get the crew 5 in, all our gear and 2 loads. And the climb continued. And
exactly where did you take them?
To the 7,000 foot level of the Kilton Glacier. Weather is marginal, real marginal. So, let's see. On the West Approach, I have 6 other crews in climbing progress. And as I was some time later, like 5 days, picking up one of the crews coming down the mountain, the name of that crew was Outward Bound, and they swear on a pool of blood 80 feet deep that they're going to help everybody, and they're capable of it. They said, "Say, there's been one hell of an accident up at the 16,800 foot level, West Approach. Who?" They say, "Jattinger got killed." I say, "Well, where are the guys?" They said, "They're trying to get him down." I want to insert 2 things. One of them is that at 14-3, I had the Institute of Arctic Biology radio set up at 14-3. See? And I think we'd had a contact on the accident already. And I was out, but Roberta said that when they called back, she advised them to please not take injured Jattinger back up to 17-3 Ice Cave, to bring him down to 14-3,
where this two lead expedition members had came back down the west approach. Bring him down there and I'll take him out of there. Well, he said there's a terrible storm in progress. So I said, well, for the clear is getting as far as you can. He said, he's too sick to move. I said, you're gonna lose him. And just one conversation later, I told Roberta, if they don't move him, they're gonna lose him. So they did. Pneumonia.
Oh. And a broken arm, fractured skull.
So he fell.
Yeah, he fell at 16.8 about.
How did he do that? How did
he? Hell, that's easy. The wind pick you up and blow you like a clothes on a line.
That's what I mean. Wind.
Well, yeah, but then you're roped up and you're falling and falling. Crash, you break your arms, your legs.
I know, Don, but I mean, there's a thousand ways a guy can fall. You're
well, when you're roped up, waiting for it all anchored there, and the wind rips you out with a roof, right. What are you going to do?
Well, I don't know. So I asked. You know, yeah. I wasn't there.
Yeah, yeah, right. And, right. You know, it's
you got to put down how the guy happened to fall. You know, I mean,
chancy damn deal.
Sure, I understand that.
Yeah. Anyway,
probably better than a lot of other people after writing this book.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Anyway, so his own crew got him down almost 1,000 feet on a terrible blow hit. And they panicked and left him hanging on the face, whipping in the wind. Well, anyway, wait a minute. Now, I'm going to make a correction. I disregard one thing. The Institute of Arctic Biology Radio was how we communicated and first found it. Now we're going to talk about out in the mountain.
Okay.
Outward bound, we're on a climb. Coming down. They run into the body. He said, let's take him down. So they moved him about 1,000 feet. Down a sheer face.
These other guys left him hanging on the rock?
And he's all of a blow hit. He's dead.
Well, how the hell did they, you know, I mean, why wouldn't they have pulled him up and just tied him down?
Damn, it isn't that easy.
Yeah.
You're freezing to death yourself. Right. So, outward bound moved him about 1,000 feet. I'm going to make a correction. Make sure you don't get screwed up here. You read it back to me. Because I got the facts straight now. There's many of these deals floating around in my mind. Okay, so in the meanwhile, the members of Jettinger crew called in and said, our snowshoes have been swept away in an avalanche. Drop us snowshoes. Better yet, come pick us up at 14-3, all of us. Not telling me they left him hanging up there 15 pounds. And so I went by and I dropped them snowshoes and I said, here's snowshoes, because the park says for you guys to walk up at the 7 level. I say for you to go down to 10 and I can get you all one load.
In other words, strain the park to move it at 10?
Right.
Okay.
So, they took off down from the 10 level. And, behind them, now comes outward bound. See? Okay, they moved Jettinger down. Another hell of a blow hit. Almost blew them away. They took off down the mountain. Next thing that happened, the parents go ape. The word's out. He's hanging on the face. Outward bound's only moving 1,000 feet. Less. Parents are ape. Everybody's ape. Say, I get all kinds of calls. Won't you please bring our son down? I say, only if Janae will help me. Can't get him. Janae's busy, going to get ready for another expedition. Anyway, Janae says, well, I'll do her. waited another day. The storm let up, snowed about 6 feet. We come whistling in from 15,000, landed at 14.3. This is bad news. The flight needed new snow. But I cut her long and landed high and steep. Made it. Had a hell of a time. Turning the plane around, two guys, one pushing and one running the plane. Spent 8 hours running the runway.
8 hours?
Steady moving. Told Janae and Latney about every third time.
Took you 8 hours to back the runway down.
2,200 feet long.
God.
Round and around and around. Finally, another overcast showed up. Winds came in, luckily, from the west, the right direction. And I was just shot and exhausted. I said, Janae, the wind's going to blow the plane away. I got to go. He said, fine, let me give you one more push. And it was a superhuman effort. He jarred that cub loose and I shot out of there like a rocket in about a 50-mile-an-hour headwind. And got to Talkeetna and, of course, the terrible turbulence, south winds, Talkeetna. And went to bed. And 4 hours later, I was listening. 3411, and Janae calls up, says, hey, says, you still awake? Rich says, I'm just shutting the radio off. What do you need? He says, I got the body down from the 15,000 foot level. She said, you did? I told her that he was hanging there like a spider in a web, 1,000 feet in the sky. Janae got him down alone. Without killing both of them again, wiping himself out. Janae. Not only that, but he drug him a lateral mile, probably a mile and a half, up the glacier to the 14.3 level. Because he's way up here, he has to go way down and then way back up. In 4 hours, that guy did that. Alone. He says, oh, he's got a terrible storm. So, 6 o'clock in the morning, phone rings, I bail out of bed. Janae says, hey, clear. Christ, I looked out in the top of my kidney, was in a homogenizer. The clouds was going all directions, and I said, what's the wind? He said, oh, not much. She said, maybe 15 miles an hour from the west. I said, Janae, how much snow? 2 feet. Say, now what's really real? You want to get out of there. Say, well, maybe 25.
Yeah.
I say, gusty, 50. Smooth.
Yeah.
So I blast up there, and I get about to it, and it's sealed in. All about noon, another call. Calm, clear. Another foot of smoke building. He said, oh, how's it going? Calm. Come on. He says, oh, God. You know, when you make that approach, you're coming into a wall, and the thing is 20,320 feet, and you can't abort the takeoff. If you get a 2,000 foot meter sink, you can't even turn away from it. You crash. That's what happened to Stevenson Elliott. In the 1916 180 crash at 17.2. Couldn't turn away from it. Flying, burning. So, I circled that thing, and I finally made an approach at 16,000. There was one hell of a sink. And I come in there, and my heart was in my mouth. I thought, sure, I was going to undersink it and move into a big ice hole. But just before the very last second, I got a riser, and it jacked me up in the air another 1,000 feet. And I went ahead and landed in the furthest and the closest buttress landing I ever made in my life. And I had so much velocity and momentum, I was able to not only turn the airplane, but get it back in my tracks. Sure desperation. Loaded the body on, south east. Turn around. Come back after.
Get to tie on him.
No. Put him inside. On his top, you know, waist. 215, 6 foot 8.
Yeah.
Anyway, went right back up there, socked again. Took Jadinger at the anchorage. You don't want him laying around the hangar.
No.
And, come back to Mackage, and they called, oh, beautiful weather, got the runway prompt, another push slope. I was born in there, landed, picked up a load of freight, relayed it to 7,000. Turn around, zapped up, picked up another load, relayed it to 7,000. Had two more loads. Turn around, went up, and here come the weather from the west. Oh my God. Wild, squirrely, downwind. 20, 30, gusty, miles an hour, landing, 70 miles an hour, up a steep west approach, 14-3, later again. Janae says, what are you going to do? I said, I'm making one trip for you, and let's put her all on the plane. I said, oh, Janae, stuff her in here, let's try it. So Janae stuffed the plane full. Held a Korean V's over my head in the
what?
Face of about a 50 mile an hour wind and got out of there.
Held the what then?
The V's over your head.
Oh, oh, yeah. The
to get the center of gravity.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm room, so.
Yeah. Can't go the machine. You want to hang her up? We got one more to go, Machika Sakina. Look it, you're not going to fly back down there tonight, are you?
Nah.
I sure as heck wouldn't. Why don't you hit the sack? We'll whenever you want to start tomorrow morning.
No, I've got to do it now. I won't have any voice tomorrow.
All right, let's take her. Let's.
Nice. I'd like to know a couple of minutes.
Let's do Machico. Do you figure you can go through the Machico?
No.
All right, let's do that and heck, hit the sack. And
get the tea.
Huh?
Yeah.
Or
7-Up.
Did you know that Jadinger thing? That sounds like we ought to put that in book.
Mm-hmm.
We may have to cancel out something else.
Good.
That sounds like
that's a good one. Now, what the deal is going to be on that, though, I'll write it up as best I can from what the account description you've given me here.
I'm coming back up before you ship them out first.
Oh, look at you'll read it before I ship them out. I'm not shipping these to Ron McNally until the 1st of February.
Thank you.
Yeah. See, that's what I was trying to explain to you before. The 1st of January is the date that I've set to finish this. See? From a time standpoint. I want to finish writing the manuscript the 1st of January, which I can easily do. I've got full time between now and a week from Tuesday. Okay, when that's done, then you get it. Okay? This, you will have these two books right down until Keaton. And you'll also have a stack of tapes, brand new tapes, in your machine. Okay? And, jeez, these things. Okay, I'm going to turn this dude on. Let me see here how much tape we got. Not very much. Tell you, I think I'm going to put this on the other tape.